This Barbie is very, very tired today. How are you doing, Barbie?
I am depressed. I feel like I have seasonal affective disorder.
Girls, are you all, guys and gals, I should say, are you all with us? I'm sorry, but what the fuck? This is a very, very dark way to start the podcast, but it's a rainy Monday evening and we feel cheated, absolutely cheated out of a summer holiday.
We feel like we're in Oppenheimer.
We do. I mean, I haven't seen it.
No, me neither. It was so bleak this weekend that I actually was meant to see Oppenheimer on Sunday and I cannot face it. I already feel like I'm in a black and white
Things
film.
Are depressing enough.
Yeah. I went to a festival called Savor Festival at the Chelsea. It's like an old people's home. It's like the Chelsea.
Barracks.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Was that actually where it was?
I think it's a nursing home, isn't it?
Yes, I think so, for like people that were in the army and stuff.
Right. That might be why I felt at home, my ancient soul.
Oh, I thought you meant like because you're some kind of army gal.
Oh, right.
Army
no.
brat. I was like, since when? So you're a deeply unmilitaristic person,
no,
I would say,
deeply.
In fact.
No, it was a food festival, Savor Festival, and I was invited there by Moth Drinks.
Yeah, I've only had the Margs.
Yes, they're my fave. I always get them in little Waitrose before I get on a train.
They're very classy, aren't they, those little ones?
They're
I actually
elegant.
Quite wanted to copy... Jamie Lang and Sophie Habu, you know, the ones of...
They got personalised ones.
Yeah, and they had them at their wedding. So they shipped out like loads of Moth cocktails and served them at the wedding. I was like, that is a fucking amazing
Babes,
idea.
Why don't you do that for your wedding?
Well, I'm kind of thinking that, but then also kind of thinking that it might also be very complicated. Moth, if you hear this and it's simple, a process, shipping abroad, let me know.
Can you sponsor Kathleen's wedding?
Could you sponsor my wedding? That'd be...
So after the festival, we then went to Soho House and had a few drinks.
Oh, you guys, you are such Soho House whores. Sorry
I know,
to say it,
sorry.
Like, do you ever go anywhere else on a Saturday night?
It's actually quite gross, isn't it?
I feel like it's your after-hour spot.
It's my after-hour spot. It's because, I have to say, the dance floor at Greek Street gets quite lit on a Saturday night.
God.
And considering there is a dearth of venues open in central London, and in fact, there was a very good piece
very
in the Telegraph today all about how shit London nightlife is. So many clubs have now like closed down in East Printworks.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? Lots of them are getting like bulldozed for luxury flats, I think. That's what's happening to Printworks, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a big development.
And also, I just am too old and too tired to go like clubbing. You know, I need to somewhere that's like, I can sit down.
You can get on the Northern Line home.
Yeah. So anyway, so I was at Soho House. Sorry, everyone. And my boyfriend got a message from Moth that turned out to be a scam. And we were so sad because basically we entered a competition at the festival. We spent the entire time like losers counting the number of Moth cocktails in one of their massive fridges. And it was like, if you guess correctly, you can take the entire fridge home.
Oh my God, that's quite a fab prize.
Yeah, and my boyfriend is like really into like counting things.
You know, I think like really into cocktails.
Well,
like,
he's
yes,
also
yes,
into
he
that.
Is very into cocktails. And then I'm like, iconic margarita maker himself, quite
he
frankly.
Is. But he's also really good at numbers and data and likes analysing data.
Yes.
So he really
not our strong suit.
No. So he really rose to that challenge. And we felt like we had correctly guessed it. And so when we got the message at like 11 PM being like, you have won the Moth competition.
Who scammed you with that?
It was a fake Moth page.
How did they possibly know that you'd even entered the competition?
Because we had to post
within 1 day.
Because we had to post the numbers on their Instagram.
Oh.
So I think they must have realized that people were entering a competition.
Why do people do this? Like, am I really, really stupid and just like literally ancient and don't understand the internet? Because I have wondered, like with these fake accounts on Instagram and stuff, when there's it's always around competitions, you're right, and they're like, guys, ignore that one telling you that you've won, it's only me that, like, what's in it for the fake account?
Oh,
why would you do this?
They got money. They got money off us.
Oh.
Well, they didn't, but we almost gave them, we almost put in our bank details.
Oh, right. Okay,
and if we had had
that's
one,
what they're after.
If we'd had one more picante, I mean, who knows what we would have handled over.
You gave away your life savings over the phone once, didn't
you?
Yeah,
so. Oh my God, guys.
In the office.
This was genuinely the most embarrassing thing I've ever done. In fact, should I even say, in case someone tries to
scam
me again?
Oh, go on. I think it's an innocent mistake, honey. Like, we've all been there in some kind of way or another.
But I don't want them to think I'm like vulnerable of the mind and then try again.
Guys, please don't try and scam Ellie. If any of you have any secret plans, we're going to be absolutely on the case now.
You'll have to get through Cathers first.
Yeah, you'll have to get through me first. Each call comes through me.
So I was at my desk at GQ and I got a call from Lloyds being like, Eleanor, and they put on a really like receptionist-y voice, you know, someone that you would imagine actually works at Lloyd's, like really soothing and calm.
He's an actor. Or
maybe.
Like...
And they were like, I'm so sorry to say, but you've been scammed. Oh, no, they didn't say that. They genuinely didn't say that. no, they said, Eleanor, do you recognize this Currys purchase on your Lloyds? And I was like, holy shit, like, no, what the hell? I didn't buy a PC or whatever it was. And they're like, okay, well, we think you've been hacked. Yeah, so what we need to do is just sort that out. We're going to transfer your money into a different safer account. And I was like, okay, sure. And then they were like, so you're going to have a new account number and a new sort code. So you just need to transfer your money into this new account with a sort code and account number.
Could you actually imagine? Like your literal life savings, I swear.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I was 22, so it would have been limited. But
your life savings as a 22-year-old.
Nevertheless, it was my life savings. And I was genuinely, I like put in the sort code. And then as I was doing that, I was like, wait, what? No one has a new, yeah, you have your sort code for life with that account.
Yeah, it's the same bank always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a red flag. So I stopped. But thank like God. I was, had I been a bit more tired, a bit younger,
it could have been curtains.
Yeah.
You really would have been living with your parents for another 5 years.
Yeah, I would have.
Because at that point, you were like desperately trying to move out.
But I felt so stupid. And even worse, it was I then told all my colleagues and they must have been like, what is this moron that we
But
have?
You're very upfront. And that's one thing I've always admired about you. You'd always like fearlessly tell like all colleagues that it's quite embarrassing stories. And I think people love that honesty.
Yeah.
It's very endearing.
It is endearing. Although since then, I have met people who tell me too much, who overshare. And then I'm like, oh my God.
Is that me?
That it's you're oversharing too much. And therefore, I can't believe how I must sound to some people.
I know. Well, I mean, I'm an oversharer as well. So, hey, that's why we have a podcast.
But then I also think that people that overshare are the most fun to have around.
Yeah. Well, you want to hear.
That's interesting.
You want to hear the juice, don't you?
There's nothing worse than being with someone who never has anything, who never shares any private information.
No, you're right. When people are overly private, I'm actually like, oh, come on.
If I feel cheated of good conversation, and I also think it's selfish.
It is very selfish. I know exactly what you mean, honey. Well, no selfishness here today in the interest of true transparency. Shall we kick off the podcast?
Let's kick off.
Gals and guys, welcome back once again to another episode of Straight Up, the pop culture and celeb podcast. We are getting into a couple of different things today, but firstly, most importantly, we are as barbified as the rest of the world, and we are going to give our official verdict on the biggest film of what? Like, I want to say this year, but I don't think I've known a film take such kind of cultural relevance for a really long time.
Well, the Telegraph's film critic said that the double Barbenheimer moment, that's Barbie and Oppenheimer, guys, was the most seismic moment in cinema in the last decade. Oh my God. Guys, I have a pronunciation problem and I blame my French mother.
I do actually excuse you with the half French thing.
But also, do I just have something wrong with me?
Well, I'm not great at pronunciation either, as the listeners well know. So let's just move on from that one.
Sorry, the most seismic moment in the last decade in cinema.
Yeah, to me, it actually feels like the biggest moment in cinema, like, in my adult memory.
Ooh.
And with those films, you know, no one, people haven't been this excited to go to the cinema, like, in the digital era.
Yes.
Whereas for people to not only want to go and see one film, but two, and two very different films.
And I read that, like, if Barbie was sold out, they would then buy Oppenheimer tickets.
And go and see one of the, I saw a funny tweet, actually, that was like, my whole mind has been so like warped by this cultural moment that I see someone walking down the street in a pink top and black trousers and I'm like, he must be going to the movies to like see
That's
both
so
films
good.
In one. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it is really nice to see that event cinema is back, and also post-pandemic that like cinemas can still make money.
Also, I've got to say, I know in one way we live in quite like a culturally bland capitalist world where everyone's taste is the same, but in another, I feel like we live in a deeply polarized world where no one can agree on anything. So the fact that so many people have all wanted to go and even see the same films. And as I say, lots of people have wanted to go and see both of those very different films, I think is actually like quite heartwarming in a way, isn't it?
I agree.
And especially like you say, Barbenheimer, rather than it being Barbie versus Oppenheimer, it's like this more like, as you say, like moment for cinema in general where they can kind of come together.
And I think both of them have helped increase the hype of the other. And also, it's quite interesting that people would even be interested in a film about the atomic bomb, who's not, and Cillian Murphy's not that massive a star. Like,
I actually literally hard disagree there. I think people are fucking obsessed with Cillian Murphy.
I guess through Peaky
Blinders. Like, he's one of those, like, absolute, like.
But he's no Margot Robbie.
Oh, people love him. Like, when he got one of the Men of the Year awards at GQ, like, it was like a huge moment.
I guess people are proper into Peaky Blinders.
World, yeah, especially that, like. I think men especially, like, love him.
I do not get the appeal of him as a as a heartthrob.
So I did find him quite seductive in the film Red Eye with Rachel McAdams. Have you seen that?
No.
It's like a thriller set on a red eye. Shocker. And he's like this creepy psychopath, basically, but he's really quite seductive and alluring in it, in a very unsettling way.
I saw that Emily Blunt gave an interview today that said she found it really distracting watching Oppenheimer because she kept getting lost in his eyes.
Oh, really?
His deep blue eyes.
He ain't young, you know, he's in his late 40s, isn't he? I think he's, I want to say he's like 48 or something, so I literally could be getting that completely wrong, but I'm fairly certain he's 46 or 48.
Which is young, but not so young.
It's not usual.
No, it's true.
Well, well
actually
it is.
For men it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, actually, I'm probably talking complete rubbish there. Because
you really are.
Brad Pitt, George Clooney, they're all old.
Actually, someone at a wedding I went to last weekend asked me who my surprise old man crush was.
Oh, that's a good question. What did you say?
And I got mocked. I said, Tom Jones.
Sorry.
Is that sad?
Yeah. Tom Jones is like 86.
I thought we were talking
like literally 86.
Old. But he doesn't look 86.
He's like proper old.
He doesn't look
is
86.
Is it you? Who is it that we know that has a, who's Simon Cowell is their weird celebrity crush?
Wait, that
or was that one
me.
Of our guests?
Oh my
Someone
God.
Someone has said Simon Cowell is their weird crush.
Simon Cowell's new face or his old face? I interviewed Simon Cowell once and I did feel that I was in safe hands. You know, like there's an air of authority. Maybe it's actually more dictatorial vibe, but Bruce Springsteen is 80 and he is
Kylie's dad.
Oh my God. Yeah, guys, I don't know if new listeners will know the story. Well, obviously you won't because I haven't told you, but oh yeah, I once got shown, my editor once said to me like, oh, look at this picture, and it was Kylie Minogue with a man, and I was like, oh, is that Kylie's dad? And he was like, no, Eleanor, it's Bruce Springsteen. So then on my leaving card, when they did like a mock-up GQ cover, they were like, Eleanor Hall's interviews Bruce Minogue. Yeah. But to be fair, I was like 22.
That's an innocent mistake.
I'd never seen Bruce Springsteen.
No, you know the name, but perhaps not the image.
I hadn't seen the face. Anyway, he's a fine looking old man.
He is. That's true.
Very virile looking, I'd say.
To steer us back onto the topic of Barbie.
Sorry.
Do you remember in the film how they nod? So guys, if you haven't seen it, they nod to previously like short-lived Barbies. So Barbies that they ran and then were kind of ill-advised and so were taken off shelves quite quickly. And one of them was like a Palm Springs sugar daddy Barbie. Do you yeah. remember that? It was like an old man Barbie.
It played by Rob Brydon.
No.
Oh.
He didn't have, there was no actor. I think they just showed him.
Oh, right.
Didn't they? Who was Rob Brydon in that film? I've forgotten now.
I read that he had a cameo. I thought it was just a sugar daddy.
I
Barbie.
Thought he was maybe one of the suits at Mattel.
Oh, maybe. I don't like Rob Brydon. He's rude to me.
Oh, when you did red carpet things.
Yeah. Anyway, so Barbie.
The verdict.
I would like to also just preface this with a funny fact. Apparently Ryan Gosling only said yes to becoming Ken because he was quite reticent at first.
Oh, really?
Greta Gerwig asked him, yeah, he wasn't sure he wanted to do it.
That's interesting because I saw a video of him on Twitter earlier that was like, you know, Ryan Gosling's been prepping for this his whole life, and it was a video of him dancing at the with like all these blonde girls when he was in the Disney club, and he is literally such a mini Ken. It's like hilarious.
Yeah, oh, he does look like
his Kenergy.
His Kenergy is Kenoff.
Off the charts. Yeah.
No, he said that the what persuaded him to do the film was a picture of a naked Ken face down in the mud by a squished lemon.
Wait, but you mean the what squished the lemon, sorry?
Well, that you can't tell from the picture, but there is a squished lemon next to a Ken face down in the mud, and that was a picture that convinced him.
Why did he see that picture?
Cathars, these are just too many complicated questions. I don't know.
I need a little bit more interrogative journalism here, honey.
I don't know who did that, but
why did that convince him?
Anyway, he sent a photo to Greta Gerwig saying, I shall be your Ken, for this story must be told, and attached the picture.
Oh, okay, that's cute. I mean, he is literally the star of the film, isn't he?
He is.
Let's face it, it is. It's Ken's world, and Barbie just lives in it, sadly.
For a film that is about sticking it to the patriarchy, actually, the man wins.
He is literally by far the standout actor in the film, isn't he?
I think he might win a Best Supporting
He's
Actor
so
Oscar.
Funny in it, guys. I'm sure lots of you will have seen it by now, and surely you agree that it is literally just his film. He's the Oscar-worthy winner.
He is.
I love his just self-referential, like, facial expressions, like the way that he kind of is like smiling in this quite mocking way when they're doing their dance numbers, all the Kens.
Yeah, oh my God. So at one point, Ken discovers patriarchy in the real world. This isn't a spoiler. Actually, maybe it is, but whatever.
I mean, it's like the main narrative thrust of the films.
So, and he discovers and he becomes obsessed with horses and they all ride around on hobby horses.
Oh God, yeah. He's like, I realized when I looked into the patriarchy that horses are just men extenders.
Do any men in your life really love horses?
No, but I guess that's a lot more of an American thing, isn't it? That kind of like Wild West cowboy vibe.
Because actually when I was younger, I had a hobby horse and I was really obsessed with horses.
I was really obsessed with horses. In fact, I was Googling earlier to try and remember which Barbies I had. And the Barbie that I really remember that I loved the most was this kind of like Cinderella Princess Barbie, and she came with like a horse and carriage. And the horse, I loved the horse.
Yes, because actually, I have to say, it wasn't until after the film that I was like, oh yes, horses, patriarchy. But I remember in the film being like, why is horses patriarchy? But as you say, it must be an American thing.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to nod to the most obviously like macho things. So horses, there was Ryan Gosling wearing that really long, like mink white coat at the most absurd moments. And it's almost like he's meant to be this kind of like Andrew Tatey type figure.
Yeah. There's a really funny scene that made me laugh where all the Kens play their guitar at women rather than for women.
It's so good because it's just so true, isn't it? He literally says, I'll play guitar at you. And she's like, yay. Like that is literally every woman's nightmare.
One of my most harrowing moments on holiday was when two men decided to sit me and my friend down in a forest in Bali after we'd just taken some magic mushrooms to play their guitar at us.
And that must have been so bizarre.
Yeah, and also their faces then obviously morphed into like strange, strange things.
You're like, yeah, I love the song.
Yeah. Anyway.
Like, making banana pancakes. Like, can we just talk about the set design? Like that, I feel, to me, was perhaps the best thing about the whole film. That set is just amazing. And I cannot believe that it was outside of London.
It actually reminded me of the Teletubbies set.
Oh, I kind of know you mean. What, just with the wild surrealness of it? Yeah. I mean, it's literally in like Leytonstone or somewhere, isn't it? The big Warner Bros. Studio outside of London. Like it's deeply at odds with Barbieland, and I actually love that.
So to set the scene, guys, we went to Barbie together on the Monday, like we promised we would. I wore pink.
I wore a pink top, just with jeans.
It was floral, but yeah.
Oh yeah, I just couldn't find a...
Mine was proper Barbie pink, but I was a bit embarrassed and put a jumper on.
However, you were wearing your jumper the whole time.
Yeah. Anyway, and we queued outside, and then this...
I've never seen a queue like it, can we just say?
Oh my God, me neither.
The queue, guys, for anyone that knows Leicester Square, was all the way from the cinema in Leicester Square round into Chinatown.
It was a screener, so it was for press. And I was like, there aren't even that many journalists working in London.
In the whole of the UK, surely.
Yeah, like,
who are these people?
No wonder everyone's not making any money. There are too many of us, far too many journalists. Anyway, and we were queuing, and this man with the megaphone started shouting at everyone, like, how dare you prop up something that's oppressed so many women? You should all be ashamed of yourselves. Barbie is so bad.
Yeah, he literally had a megaphone, but he kind of looked like one of those guys that had been like sat on a park bench drinking Kay Ciders for the last 4 days.
Yeah.
And was just shouting and shouting, what do you think this is? Disgusting. Barbie movie. Do your parents know you're here? And he kept like literally pulling specific people out of the crowd and annihilating their outfits.
Oh my God, it was awful.
It was so awful.
But Katha's woman of the people decided to take a stand, which kind of backfired.
Yeah, it did. It was really annoying me, and we happened to be right next to him at this point because the queue had just like moved and moved.
And also Kathleen doesn't need a megaphone.
No, exactly. And he just kept being so rude, specifically to women, about what they were wearing. I was like, nah, this actually ain't it. And so just said, by the way, everyone here is a journalist. People are here for their jobs, so just chill out.
And then
go down well.
That absolutely delighted him, because then he was like, you mean to say you're getting paid to watch Barbie?
jobs? Well, I hope you're really proud. Yeah. Is this what you planned on when you were a child? It was absolutely bonkers, wasn't it?
And also because I was like, well, when you put it like that, you do have a point. I can't believe our job is popping off to go and watch
Barbie.
But
also, like, let's face it, no one's there because it's their job. Everyone's there because they got a free ticket because they're pressed and they wanted to bring someone. Like, there's literally thousands of people waiting to see the film because, like we say, it's like the biggest film of like the last 10 years.
But I'm glad you stood up for us.
Thank you. I just actually was getting really riled up.
He would start shaming women.
Yeah, it was like deeply inappropriate. And I just, I'm sorry, you don't get to comment on how short a woman's skirt is with a sodding megaphone. Like, no, I'm not going to allow that.
Although I will say it was quite entertaining.
It was quite entertaining.
And had nothing else to do.
Did definitely bring bring a bit of life to the queuing. But I would say that.
Yeah, what was your kind of top thought?
So can I also just say, and I'm saying this knowing that we wore pink, we embraced it. I felt that it was essential to wear pink. It's Barbie. I would have loved to go to the proper premiere and wear like a full-on Barbie dress. I'm not going to lie. So this is with no real, you know,
shame,
angst or shame. But why? What is wrong with us? Like, why have we all gone so nuts? Like, Barbie fever. Like, the fact that thousands of fully grown adults like are wearing pink and queuing and just like, it is deeply tragic, is it not?
It's
in a way,
deeply tragic, actually. Yeah,
it must just be because she's such a cultural icon, Barbie, like everyone knows her, and therefore knowing that you're going to see a film that's going to like deconstruct it and subvert it and knowingly play with this potentially problematic figure maybe just literally excites everyone.
One of my friends has booked to go 3 times.
Oh no, that is too much. Why would you need to see it 3 times?
Because she
just definitely,
because she kept getting invited by different friends and she was like, okay, she was like, I love Barbie, so be fun.
Gosh, that is commitment to the cause.
I think as well, if you're sad or if you're feeling a bit glum, like there's no way you're not going to have a good time all
yes,
going
so
with your friends
good,
to watch
it?
Barbie.
But yeah, once you've seen it, you've seen it. You know the jokes and stuff.
I
so
certainly don't want to see it again. Okay, so my top line was, this is a fun film and visually very pleasing and Margot Robbie's amazing and Ryan Gosling is very funny, but I didn't think it was clever enough and I didn't think it was funny enough.
I agree with you. There was a few laugh out loud moments, like totally. But I think considering how amazing Greta Gerwig is and considering how brilliant so much of the film was and how much effort and thought and time and like tiny detail had gone into it, it could have moved the conversation about like the gender wars on a little bit more. And I think in a way, the film, everything the film was saying about the patriarchy and about feminism was pretty like basic stuff. It was quite a simple girl bossy kind of version of feminism, and that's fine. But I think in a way, the people that really need to like see this film and learn from that message are the people that are never going to go and see it anyway. Like, women are all well aware of all the things that they talk about that are wrong with the world in the way that it's set up to be misogynistic, you know, like totally. America Ferrera's character like lists the way in which when a man does this but a woman does this, when a woman has to work twice as hard, like, you know, not to poo-poo the message, obviously that's great, but I think as women, we're all well aware of that message now. We don't really need to be like told it again without it at least moving on the conversation a little bit.
Well, there was some, yeah, I do totally agree. And there was one moment which was clearly meant to be like a big rousing monologue for America Ferrera in the film, which has actually been chosen by some reviewers as like a really great moment in the film where America Ferrera is like, actually, let's hear it for the ordinary Barbie, for the working mom who doesn't necessarily have to have an amazing job.
The Barbie that's just trying to get through the day.
But it's like, that's not radical anymore. Like, we know that the ordinary woman is an amazing woman.
But I think what's interesting is that one of the themes of the film is Barbie's evolution. So obviously the film begins with the whole parody. This isn't a spoiler, guys. It's been much trailered. And it's making the point that pre-Barbie, little girls only had baby dolls to play with. There was no like adult female dolls. So basically the opening, like the destruction of the baby dolls and this like rejection of motherhood as the sole aspiration for girls, I think is quite powerful. And they're trying to make the point that that's what Barbie was all about. However, I think the theme of like Barbie's evolution from a doll that's just physically perfect to a doll that's physically perfect and astoundingly high achieving, that actually might put a new pressure on women and girls and on girls and the women they'll become, I thought was quite interesting. Like, the film's obviously trying to get at that. Barbie's amazing career, whether it was in STEM, whether it's as the president, whether it's in biology, whatever she's doing, those were almost kicked back to public opinion on the fact that Barbie was becoming this like stereotypical housewife. Mm. So Barbie obviously was created in the 50s, and then it was conceivable that a woman would just be like pottering around her dream home and like looking at some clothes, and Ken would like pop in from work occasionally or whatever. But obviously as culture changed and women in the workplace, you know, had more responsibility, and I guess we've just had more opportunity, they realized that Barbie needed to have these amazing careers. That was meant to be liberating for women. Like, wow, you can be a president instead of being a mother. But actually, is that not really confining in itself? Like, seeing someone that's so aspirational, like Barbie, actually can make women feel worse about themselves.
Yes, it's not. There's not really any like middling. Where was the journalist, for instance, guys?
Oh yeah, there is a journalist. I think there is. Because you remember as well that Amelia Dimms dressed up as reporter Barbie on the red carpet.
Oh, that's true. Okay, well, this might be a very unpopular opinion, but I felt like if I'd been a teenager or a little girl watching that, or even just myself as a 30-year-old woman, I don't come away from that film and be like, oh my God, look how empowered that I can be and do all these amazing amazing jobs and women can be anything. I came away from that film being like, holy shit, Margot Robbie and all her co-stars are so hot and yeah. I feel so inadequate and they are so perfect and I just wish I looked like them and they're completely unattainable standards of beauty.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I think there's definitely a sense just like, God, we women, we are tired. When you come away from that film, then you're like, yeah, it's pretty damn exhausting. But at the same time, props to Greta Gerwig, really, for even getting some of that language into a film of this scope anyway. Like, do we hear about literally, like, dismantling the patriarchy usually in a crowd-pleasing, like, family film of this ilk? Like, we wouldn't. So in and of itself, I guess that is something. I think it's just that it's, like, too knowing and it's, like, revolutionary kind of vim, isn't it? It's, like, trying to posit that it's more revolutionary than it actually is.
Yes. But when actually it's just a sugar high.
Is that also, though, because we are 32 and jaded? We've always been reading, watching through a feminist framework, through a Marxist framework.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of how we consume culture. So my 10-year-old cousin Bella has given her official review for the Straight Up Honeys.
Hi, I'm Bella and I watch the Barbie movie. I think it's amazing because of all the creative colours and ideas that they came up with. I think the actors did an amazing job and all the choreography is in it is so entertaining. I really enjoyed the experience. It was so fun and entertaining.
How cute.
Oh my God,
isn't
that's
that just
really
iconic?
Cute.
Future film critic
that
in the making.
Iconic.
And actually, when I hear that, I'm like, that does make me feel like, God, I'm a bit cynical. Because I'm, wow, if 10-year-old girls can go and watch that film.
I think it's a 12A, so that she's...
Yeah, that's allowed. 12A is just with your parents.
Oh, yes, that's true. Because there's a lot of motherfucking and boob jokes.
Is there motherfucking?
There's two motherfuckers. I counted as I was there. Could it be more?
But yeah, I'd say it's kind of... Yeah, it's got a couple of adult jokes.
Yeah.
But it's also quite PC.
But don't you think that you would come away from that being like, wow... These women are so perfect and I look nothing like them.
No, I think I'd probably have felt really empowered as a 10-year-old girl watching the film. Because the Barbies are all different and they have obviously made, you know, the effort to cast a diverse range of Barbies.
Yeah, but they're all stunning. They're all stunning and quite slim.
Yeah, but they weren't all slim.
Were they not?
All at different sizes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've obviously done that on purpose. I think
maybe I'm only remembering like
you're
the
probably
main
just
ones.
Yeah. And to be fair, they do obviously make the whole like quip about that. Like Margot Robbie is stereotypical Barbie and Helen Mirren even like says it in her narration and you can let the joke slide because it is so true but she's so adorable in it. She is great. Margot Robbie makes the film. The film could be, I read Mark Kermode in The Garden say that like basically this bit of like flim flam could be extremely floppish without Margot Robbie to carry it.
Yes.
But she, Ryan Gosling and all the songwriting makes it a kind of amazing spectacle. And it is, it's so fun.
It is, it's so fun. I am being a bit devil's advocate. I was a bit shocked to see how tiny Dua Lipa's cameo was. And in fact, all the cameos were so minuscule.
Yeah. What I will say is I feel like the cameos were a very, very, very clever marketing ploy. It was deeply unnecessary for a lot of those people to be in the film.
Dua Lipa, you wouldn't even know it was her. She like appeared in the sea from a great distance.
Like she had two lines, like once at the beginning at the beach because she's a mermaid and then once again when she's in the pool at the Casa Dojo Mojo house. So basically, if you haven't seen it, without giving away too many spoilers, guys, what essentially happens is, just to give you a very quick rundown, Barbie starts getting all these like existential fears and realizes that something's going on with her. Her feet start going flat, she starts getting cellulite, and this weird Barbie, basically played by Kate McKinnon, explains that the membrane between Barbie Land and the human world has become sort of disconnected, and if Margot Robbie's Barbie wants to go back to how she was, then she needs to go into the real world, find her like human equivalent and see why she's sad and cheer her up. I think essentially that's it. And Ken goes with her. He's a kind of stowaway. And it's while they're in the real world that Ken discovers the patriarchy. He then brings the patriarchy back to Barbie Land.
Yes.
And therein lies the entire narrative, essentially.
And this has greatly irked a lot of American Republican men.
Yeah.
And there's a really funny YouTube video from Ben Shapiro, that awful right-wing commentator, where he's so upset by this literal like kids blockbuster that he has recorded a 43-minute tirade in which he lambasts Barbie as like hugely sexist towards men and burns Barbies in a bin.
I mean, that is quite hilariously deeply ironic, isn't it? Because the whole point of the film is to like trigger that deeply fragile type of masculinity.
Yes.
So it's doing exactly what it set out to.
Exactly.
I did think, though, and I said this to you, didn't I, when we came out of the film, I was like, God, the incels are gone. Hate this. This is definitely needed, and I think so important for younger people to watch it, like we said, but I can definitely see that... I feel like it's stoking the gender wars, fanning the flames more than it's
of incel culture.
Putting them out. Yeah.
I have to say, and I think it is insulting to men in a funny way, and women Yeah,
it is insulting to men,
yeah,
actually.
It is, actually.
And actually, I think maybe that's almost the point, isn't it? It's like the fact that these men are just being treated like women are, usually, the fact that that is so deeply insulting to so many people as well, shows like how kind of fucked the world really is and how deeply ingrained sexism still
is. And without spoiling it, eventually when order is found again in Barbie world, Ken goes back to his kind of sidekick role, not because he kind of loses the fight with patriarchy, but because he agrees that actually Kens just aren't good enough.
Yeah, and he's like, actually ruling was too much work.
Yeah.
Although I did read a funny piece, well, it was actually a really interesting piece in Politico about the gender wars and what Barbie says about them. And they did say, the writer, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten their name, but I'll pop it in the show notes, that unfortunately that is in fact the biggest female fantasy of all in the film, is that men would ever feel that way.
Yeah.
That they'd be like, oh, we can't be bothered to be in charge, it's too much work.
Yeah.
Like, we wish.
Can we talk about Ken's crotch?
I mean, I knew you'd want to talk about that.
The nude blob.
The nude blob.
So I just have some interesting trivia about
Ken's
crotch, which is that everyone at Mattel was incredibly stressed about what to do because they didn't want to commit to a penis, but they wanted to suggest that he had a penis.
It was more than just what Barbie had.
So they actually recruited a child psychologist to like advise on like what would not disturb the children. So they settled on a nude blob, a mound with underpants. But then that changed back down to a flat nothing because an engineer realized that you could like shave off half a cent off every Ken if you got rid of the mound.
Oh,
so then that's
that
why
is really interesting.
That's why he went back to just a square, because he has quite a rectangular crotch in most of the Barbies. The Barbie I had was just like
as in Barbie or Ken?
Ken.
I literally can't remember.
He didn't have a mound.
I'm not actually sure I had a Ken. I think I would just repurpose my brother's Action Men.
Oh, I see. Well, that's quite sensible.
Yeah, the spectre of like male ineptitude in the film, I can see why people aren't loving that because they do make, like Ryan Gosling's Ken is a little bit moronic.
Yes, and I do think you're completely right that the people that actually need to understand the message from Barbie are the people that would never go and see the film in the first
place.
And would
hate it.
And actually would hate it and find it deeply insulting and therefore wouldn't listen.
Yeah, yeah, it's a slight issue there, isn't it?
And also there's the whole thing is because Barbie doesn't have genitalia and neither does Ken and she doesn't actually understand what sex is. But she's basically being like, no, I don't want to be with you the whole time. And that totally plays into the incel narrative of this stupid thing called reverse rape, where they think that actually they are victims of a different kind of rape, which is one of complete neglect.
Oh, because women won't sleep with them.
Because women won't sleep with them. They think that's worse than rape.
Right.
And I guess that Barbie narrative of the Barbie not wanting Ken almost plays into that incel narrative of...
It's like, see, women actually do feel this way now. Yeah. I mean, it will be really interesting to see how the whole film is like deconstructed and
if there is an incel listening to our podcast... And
let us know.
Could you go to the...
not going to lie, I've definitely got quite a strong feeling that there are no incels listening to this
but if you
pop
might
culture
have...
podcast hosted by two unhinged women.
But they might hate listen.
Yes.
If you have the capacity to be an incel further down the line.
Could you let us know?
Yeah.
I mean, what I think is really interesting about Barbie is that...
Actually, that's a really interesting feature idea. You should try and interview some incels.
Yeah.
About what they think of Barbie.
It is an interesting feature idea. I mentioned this to you off air before, but what I found really fascinating, which I first found out about this weekend on that Instagram account, like History for Cool Kids, and then I went away and read a piece about Ruth Handler, the creator of Barbie, on Rolling Stone, all about what Barbie is in fact based on. And actually, Ruth Handler got the idea for Barbie from a doll who actually originated from a magazine cartoon in Germany, and she was a sex worker, Lily.
Oh my God.
So no wonder Barbie looks like how she does in a way as well, because she was literally modelled on a sex worker.
Oh my God.
They just obviously skipped that part out in the film.
Tits so they're about to lift off.
Yep. And Ruth Handler appears in the film. Obviously, an actor plays her. And they're like, wow, a woman created Barbie. This is amazing. And there's like a kind of joke about how she got, she only was one of the founders or CEOs of Mattel until she got done by the IRS. She and her husband founded Mattel together, and she was, yeah, done for, it was something to do with Mattel, like fudging their numbers because of stocks.
Yeah.
But anyway, the inspiration for Barbie was Ruth Handler had noticed in the 50s that her daughter, Barbara, and her friends preferred like paper dolls, so i.e. like a drawing of a woman. They could kind of project their own fantasies of what their adults lives would look like on that. And they were more interested in that in a way than like their baby dolls. Mm. However, her husband, Elliot, wasn't convinced when she took the pitch to him and was like, I think we should design this adult doll. He was like, no, it's not going to work. People aren't going to want it. Like, there's just no point. There's no market for it, really. Baby dolls are the best dolls. They then went on a family holiday to Germany, saw Build Lily, realized how popular she was. So what had happened is people loved the magazine, the newspaper cartoon so much that the doll, I guess, became like a kind of piece of merch, and it was sold in like tobacconists and places like that. It's like a little mini like sex doll in a way. So deeply unchild friendly, considering what happened with Barbie. But they saw how many people loved this doll. Ruth Handler was like emboldened to realize that like it actually would work. Went back to the US, designed her version, Barbie, launched it in 1959. And obviously it was like a massive success, but the Build Lily creators. So she was a comic strip character, Lily, created by Reinhard Boothen for the tabloid newspaper Build. Basically, they were super pissed, as you would kind of imagine, once Mattel launched Barbie and it did really well. They tried to sue and said that you'd like, that they'd stolen, you know,
IP
and trade it off as their own. And Mattel actually ended up buying all the rights to Build Lily.
Oh my god!
And then I guess just kind of like hid that story in the back drawers of history so that they could get along with pushing her as a very child-friendly Barbie. Apparently once there was even a Barbie that had inflatable boobs.
Oh my god!
You could like put it in the back and the boobs would go,
oh my god,
bigger. Because you know how there's been just so many different Barbies, as they know in the film. There's been the pregnant Barbie, we mentioned that before. She wasn't actually Barbie though. She was the friend of Barbie, Midge.
You know, Ken is actually based off Ruth Handler's son, who was gay.
Kenneth.
Cute. He died of AIDS. Very
Didn't
sad.
Oh, that's really sad.
And quite an iconic Ken that has been reclaimed by the gay community is Magic Earring Ken.
Yeah, what is Magic Earring Ken? I keep seeing this. Did you pierce his ear? What was magic about
it? No, he just had lots of like, I think he had an earring and he had lots of like hoops on his clothes. He had like a purple mesh top. He was meant to be like a hipster Ken, and Mattel then got very stressed that they'd accidentally like walked straight into the like identity politics.
A brilliantly, fabulously camp Ken.
Yeah,
they didn't
mean to create a camp Ken, but it has now been like reclaimed by parts of the gay community who obviously
a lot of them. I love that. Well, the film is so camp.
It's like camp.
It's literally, I would maybe say the campest film I've ever seen.
How would you feel if you met someone who was a Barbie collector, a man who spent like £30,000 on collecting?
A straight man?
Just a man.
I would be like, you've got the money to do it. Good for you, honey.
Would you not? Okay, yeah. Say he was a straight man. Would you think like he had a weird fetish?
Yes.
But with a gay
which
man, it's okay.
Maybe deeply problematic of me to even say, but for some reason, yes, that is exactly where my
I would feel
go.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah. If I like dated a man who had a huge Barbie collector's like collection, I'd think he was really weird.
If your boyfriend had a secret Barbie collection that you found a month before your wedding, would you call it off?
Well, if they were Barbies from when he was a child, like, no, I'd be like, oh, that's quite cute.
No, they're new. They
but
are.
If they were from, I wouldn't call it off, but I'd be deeply concerned because I'd be like, this is really weird. Why do you have a fantasy about like this blonde doll and what are you doing with them? And yeah, I would feel very strange about it, I must say.
I might have to call off that wedding.
Yeah.
On your behalf.
Yeah, I just feel like
it would just be a
I'm not, do you know what? I will say, and this is no shade to hobbyists. I think hobbies are brilliant and I would love to have more hobbies. I actually feel quite insecure about the fact that I don't have any hobbies because I think it's quite cool to do those things. And once my dad even did ask me about 10 years ago, my dad was like, what do boys of your age do for their hobbies? And I'm like, I don't know, like Xbox. He's like, they're not hobbies, like they're activities. I was like, I just don't think they really have hobbies. My dad is an avid stamp collector
and
a bird watcher.
No, do you know, I love the fact that grown adults can like play like children. I think that's really sweet.
But I think it's weird to be a collector like that.
Well I think it's specifically of like little female
figurines.
For toys
that are for children. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I don't mean inherently weird just to be a collector. Yeah. I mean, to be obsessive about a child's toy, I think, is a little bit odd.
And not even just a child's toy, but of essentially like naked plastic women.
Yes, who are like based on a sex worker.
Yeah.
As I just said, like, it's definitely got pervy undertones, that's for sure.
It's got pervy undertones. I think we've made that argument quite bulletproof now.
Yep.
You can't come at us now.
No. This is what I was going to say to you as well. I am loving the fact that Barbie is in fact a child-free icon.
Yes, we love that for
her. As we just say, never been pregnant, never had kids. And do you know that Ruth Handler was actually under a lot of pressure in the 60s? She would get loads of fan mail from children that would play with them, lots of little girls, asking if Barbie could get married and have children. And she refused to bow to the pressure. She didn't want to, Ruth Handler did not want to reinforce the idea that girls should only aspire to marriage and babies. And so in 1964, instead of a baby, she gave Barbie a kid sister, Skipper.
That's so cute.
Isn't that cute? Because Ruth was just like, no, she's not. Barbie will never have children.
She also can't.
Well, physically. You know what I mean.
Do you want to know a really sad fact about Ruth Handler?
Oh, no.
It's going to really upset you.
Oh, no.
It's going to hurt. So Mattel was a business between her husband, and their shared business partner. As you said, her husband was called Elliot. Mm. I can't remember who the business partner was called, but his last name or his first name was Matt. Maybe he was called Matthew. And the men put their names together to create Mattel. Matt L.
Absolutely.
And Ruth Handler just wasn't in there, even though it was completely shared between the three of them.
The absolute audacity.
Right? Let's not even say the name again.
Yeah, I think she mentions, actually, I read a quote from her in that, as in, obviously she passed away in 2002, but there was a quote in the Rolling Stone feature that I mentioned about her. And I think she was often being like, it's my business too.
Yeah.
She was actually brought on as a spokesperson in 1992 by the second ever female CEO they've only ever had two, which is also, I guess, one of the, even though the film's very knowing and it makes fun of itself in a way that you're like, oh, that's great, because you realize it. So i.e. Will Ferrell and the other men in suits that are at the top of this like very phallic building that's meant to be the Mattel headquarters, and Barbie thinks that it's like these amazing women that are all designing Barbie, and then she realizes that it's like a load of men designing all these little girls' toys. In a way that's funny, but it's also depressing, because actually
that's what happens in America.
They have, and there have only ever been two executives that are women at Mattel.
That's fucked up.
So they're being like, ha, 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 look at our drastically male like board. And it's like, and that's exactly what it's still like. Men are literally still deciding what toys little girls play with.
That is so awful. Yeah, and the whole scene where it's like, they're literally trying to put Barbie back in her box. And it's just a room full of suits trying to put a woman back in her box. Fun fact about Will Ferrell, most of his scenes were improvised.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He is good with that kind of thing. He had quite a similar role in the Lego movie, didn't he, I think?
I don't like him.
Like, killer of kids' dreams.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I like him in the Eurovision film. Loved that one recently. Do you know what? That is
such a couple of years ago that I think you would like and I would hate.
Yeah, it was like a Netflix film.
Yeah, I do remember that. Closing statement on Barbie, also a fun fact.
Go on.
The last line in the film, which I won't ruin, but we both
loved
it. Oh,
yeah, I wondered if you were going to say that.
We both loved it. I'm not going to say what it is, but it's very funny and very clever.
See, I thought it was funny. I actually didn't love it. I actually thought it was like flogging a dead horse. Like, they've made that joke so many times already.
Oh.
I thought they could have done something more fun.
It was good.
Sorry to say.
Okay,
I know.
Well, I liked it. And the fun fact is that it came to Greta Gerwig in a dream.
Right.
And that's why she wrote it in.
I mean, I'm surprised that it took a dream to get to that, because there, as we have said, there was literally seven other jokes of that ilk in the film.
I thought it was going to end on something annoying and earnest and deep, and it actually...
No, I know what you mean. I will totally give you that. The fact that it ends in a tongue-in-cheek way is like really
refreshing.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. The film's not too earnest. I think if the film was more earnest, it wouldn't work. It only works because it's so... like so deeply playful. Yeah.
We thought it was actually very similar to Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah, which was the last film we'd seen together in the cinema.
Yes, it was. In terms of incel vibes.
That beautiful Palm Springs aesthetic.
Yeah, and women trapped between two worlds. Women who aren't conscious.
It was quite wild. One last thing I will also say on it was I thought it was quite interesting in the Politico piece that they make the point. If you want to know more specifics, guys, you can go and read it. I'm not going to list loads of real world comparisons now, but... these like supercharged like macho displays that the Kens do, you know, because the Kens are always actually fighting with one another and they're always trying to like out Ken one another and like be more macho. The writer makes the point that actually in the real world, this is actually the way that some men are reclaiming like the power that they've been losing. So even if you look at like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg, like the literal richest, some of the most powerful men in the world, and they're talking about cage fighting, you're like, come on, like, do you really need to like out macho each other in this absolutely pathetic way?
That's so true.
Yeah, it's quite funny. Like the film, like, so in a way, like we say, like the more you dig into it, the more you can kind of make these allusions to really, really big real world topics.
Or like YouTubers that actually have beef just get in the boxing ring together and then like sell loads of tickets, like Jake Paul and Logan.
KSI.
And... Yeah. So finished with Barbie, shall we recommend our listeners to gorgeous
some other little bits and bobs? Yeah, let's tell you about our restaurants. I had such a nice wholesome weekend. I tried on some wedding dresses, which was amazing.
You promised you would take me for some wedding.
I know I will. It was actually the first like proper like try on that I'd done of like a few, like I tried on like five different dresses. They were nice, didn't find the one, but it was a fun experience for sure.
Yeah.
And also had the nicest dinner ever at Sala e Pepe, which is basically this amazing Italian in Knightsbridge. So for all the London huns, or for anyone that's got any trips coming up, it is just, yeah, this gorgeous traditional Italian Knightsbridge. It's got all the like classic trattoria vibes. So white tablecloths, exceptional service, a proper full traditional Italian menu. It's owned by Los Mochis, who are the, I've actually talked about their bar, Via Hansei 87, but Los Mochis is a Japanese-Mexican fusion in Notting Hill that's really cool. So Sala Pepe was owned for like 35 years by an iconic restaurateur and he retired, and now it's been taken over by this group, but still has all of that kind of traditional legendary flair that it was known for. It was an iconic celebrity haunt.
Oh. And what was the price point? Is it like treat vibes?
Definitely a treat vibe, defo. As I say, it's Knightsbridge, so you know, you're not going to be looking at cheap in Knightsbridge. It's for a special occasion, like you'd want to go for a birthday, a really lovely date night, really fun for gals. Like there was loads of couples in there. I went with Marlon, but there were also groups of friends, and it's buzzy, you know, an Italian just works so well like that. And I will say, you know, not to shit on anywhere else, but comparatively to other like Italian institutions in London, like La Famiglia in Chelsea, like it literally is 1,000 times better.
Standout dish
would have had to have been, I mean, they have amazing pastas. Obviously we shared like a really nice cacio pepe, because I was like, Sala Pepe should go for it. They've got carbonara, they've got ragus, they've got everything, you know, lobster linguine, all the usual things that you would expect, gnocchi, ravioli. But I had a veal milanese.
Yeah.
And it was so amazing. I mean, it was huge. It was like insanely huge. So if you do go, guys, I recommend sharing that dish. You do not need it all for one
person.
Did
you eat it all?
No, I had to bring some home. Because I had, I mean, maybe this is now becoming a bit of a theme, but basically if I go to Italian and they have pasta as a starter, like I'm not going to not get pasta as a starter, course. But then you do get quite full.
You do.
So.
If only you'd had the 8 stomachs I once saw you have when we went to a festival.
When we went to Wilderness that time.
We went to Wilderness and Kathleen wouldn't stop eating. And it was like actually quite irritating because I wanted to like do other things. But Kathleen was like, oh, I just need to have another bit of a meal.
Well, it's because it's like such a foodie festival. I was like, I've never been to a festival that's this like chic and adult and also based around amazing restaurants that I want to try that I've never even been to.
I know, I'm sorry.
Like Berber and Q. And like remember we did the All You Can Eat Pizza at Home slice and stuff like that. But yeah, I just wanted to try different things. And so I was like, oh, they had smokestack. I got a beef brisket sandwich from there. I got an ice cream sandwich.
It culminated in the ice cream sandwich. And then I was like, that is enough.
And then I could not move.
Yeah, exactly.
Had to go to bed.
So on to a slightly more affordable one. So you can decide depending on what kind of
whereabouts
mood you're
in. London.
It was in Peckham.
Name.
Right. It's called Little Kudu. It's South African.
Cute. Is it related to the Smoky Kudu?
Yes.
Nice.
So it's a husband and wife. The husband is from Cape Town and they have 3 restaurants, Little Kudu, Kudu actually, and then Kudu Grill and Little Kudu.
So which one's Smoky Kudu? Or am I thinking, was Smoky Kudu the name of the cocktail?
Smoky Kudu was the cocktail bar.
Got it. In Rixo, which
and
we
now
went
it's
to.
Reopened in Rixo, Chelsea. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which we went to. So Little Kudu is like tapas and small plates and amazing wine right by Queen's Road, Peckham Station. It's like under the arches. It's got the cutest little outside bit, which I sat in. We bumped into loads of my friends who were there, who live in Peckham. Ooh. But our standout dishes were definitely the tiny, cutest little bread loaf called the Little Kudu Loaf that came with Cape Malay butter, which is like a curried butter, which I'd never had before.
Was it a loaf like that had been dug out or...
No, it was like an actual bread, like a perfect loaf.
Because bread bowls are a South African thing, aren't they?
Are they?
I could be completely imagining this, but I'm sure that that is a thing that like South African restaurants, what? It's got a specific name. Any South African honeys that might be listening, please do correct, inform and inspire. But I do think it is a national dish.
Oh, perhaps. Then I had some gorgeous pig's head croquette with garlic and aioli. And Chardonnay shallots.
Yum, very
and yum. Very nice. And the most amazing little chicken liver tartlets. And the food just looked exquisite. It just looked amazing.
It sounds quite like Frenchy vibes almost. I was expecting...
I know what you mean. In terms of style and presentation, it was almost like fine dining, but tapas prices and small, tiny little bite-sized portions.
So you found that they worked out well? Because I can sometimes find that small plates adds up as like really expensive by the time you have everything.
It wasn't cheap. It was, but I'd say it was probably just like your average London restaurant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rather than Knightsbridge Deck.
Yes. And yeah. I had a great steak with some chips as well. Like they do like the bigger
plates. Yummy. So yeah. It's not all nibbly bits.
It's not all nibbly bits. And then.
Sounds fabulous.
An amazing grilled mango kombucha and yogurt sorbet at the end. It was really
nice. Wow, kombucha sorbet. I would love to try that.
And also I had some great tequila cocktails. Yeah, really fabulous cocktails. And just recommend, I think they do supper clubs as well. Maybe we should go to one of their supper clubs.
That would be really cute. Yeah. I would love that.
I've been to South Africa, actually. Did you know that about me?
I did, because we were friends at the time. I remember you went with your family.
I did.
I think that might have been the year we met. I think we met in the September and then you went to South Africa.
Yes, I did.
Christmas.
South Africa.
Riveting content for all the listeners there.
So, so two little restaurant recommendations and let's go to more restaurants.
Yeah, if you guys have any, please do say. Like one of my friends actually even texted me earlier. She wants to take her boyfriend out somewhere lovely in London.
Noble Rot is my favourite restaurant in London.
Okay, I'll recommend that to her. She's big foodie. She loves like loads of the spots we love. They love Berignac and they love the Palomar and like all those spots.
I've never been to the Palomar.
I would say that is actually up there with like my favourite. It's definitely in my top three restaurants in London.
I must go.
I went again recently and it was just as good as all the previous times I've ever been. It's so, so good.
Okay.
Really fun to set up at the bar.
I must go. Oh my God, we've talked so long about Barbie.
I know. I've like literally lost track of what else we were going to even talk about.
Can I just do a 5-minute interlude on tweakments? Because I was highly distressed to see how many freaks were... face tuning Margot Robbie's poor face.
Yeah, what the fuck is that? And also that whole thing, yeah, of her being like a mid or whatever. That's surely just incels being haters, isn't it?
That is being haters, but it's women face tuning the shit out of her face and making her have these like dull, perfect blue
eyes.
Why
would you do that?
She actually looks so much worse as a fake version of herself. She's so beautiful naturally. Like, why would you remove that warmth from her face? It's so odd. And it's fans. It's Margot Robbie fans doing
it. And do you think they're doing it to make her look better in their eyes?
Yes, and they'll be like, oh my God, Margot Robbie looking so stunning on the press tour, not saying that they've edited it, but obviously they have.
Why on earth
would
they do that?
To the point where I then saw this New York Post article, and I mean, New York Post is a bit problematic, can be quite right wing and women hatey, but it did have this article all about the work that Margot Robbie has had done.
Ooh, go on.
Now, I don't mean this in a shady way. I think women should get work if they want to. Lots of my friends have. I probably will. In fact, I'm far too late, probably.
Don't say that, because that means I'm really way too late.
Well, more and more, I am now one of my only friends that haven't. I would say 90% of my friends
really
have.
That many? I would say for me it's less than half, but a good percentage still.
It's really freaking me out.
Well, I'm concerned. If anyone has any non-invasive tips for this, any great creams?
No, you know, babe, I'm worried about.
I've got a wrinkle on my right, above my right eyebrow. It's like a frown line. I'm really upset about that.
Genuinely can't see it.
It's my main wrinkle that I'm
pissed about. Use a Gao Shao, whatever you call them.
Oh, what you mean, those jade things?
Yeah, no, not a jade roller. Well, it is a bit like that, but it's like a angled one. And you could really get on in there.
But why does that get rid of a wrinkle?
Because a jade roller, I think, can't get in there. It's just on the surface.
No, sorry, I mean the one that looks like it's like an eye mask. Do you mean those ones that are like that shape?
Yes.
Yeah. No. I do have one of those. I've never used it.
Just every night, massage that bit with that.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
I think
we should, babe.
I went through a phase of thinking I should do face yoga and then just don't have the time. You'd have to spend like 10 minutes in front of a mirror doing like yoga with your face.
But then there are those little things like the face gyms. Like, in fact, my friend for her wedding recently actually borrowed one off her friend and I watched her do it with them. It looks like a... looks like a little massager almost. It's got like three silver balls on the end and you go over your zapper. Cheekbones and stuff with it. Yeah, and it gives like more definition to the face.
I think they're £1,000.
Oh, are they? Well, yes, as I say, it was a borrowed one.
So one of my friends said that she did it, but apparently it's only surface level. So
it's for like the moment. Yes, it's not like doing any... Yeah. It's literally for... it's like a red carpet thing. Little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I actually did have something like that once. I had a facial that was like that from Shane Cooper, who is also Maya Jama's facialist. And he does this thing. She's also posted about it before, Maya, where he has these two big rods, like electric rods, and he like goes up along your cheekbone on each side with them to kind of make them look more pronounced.
I want everything quite that a lot. Maya does at Shane Cooper.
It was quite uncomfortable, I will say.
Was it?
Yes. Like, it was absolutely not a relaxing facial. Like, it was amazing, but it was thorough and painful.
So this is what the aesthetician?
Yeah.
Was quoted.
Aesthetician.
This is what the aesthetician, Dana Omari Harrell, said on Margot Robbie in the New York Post. And I'm only saying this because I think it's helpful to know that not everything you see is natural perfection, and
Defo. We
should all be aware of the magic that happens that we can't see. So apparently she's had an upper bleph.
What's a bleph?
It's when you I think it's when you lift the bit under your eyebrows.
Oh, but it's not the threading style one where they kind of lift from under the eye and do it all the way to the hairline, because you know is that the kind of cat's eye looking one?
I think
so. Not in vogue with all the terminology, but
I think that might be similar. I think that might be the same procedure.
And they basically like thread from under and then they pull the threads at your hairline so you can't obviously see where the scarring and stuff is.
Yes.
But it's like...
essentially, everything. It's your brow. It must be like your brow area being moved up, however they do it. Yeah, that's upper bleph. Apparently Taylor Swift has had that as well. Under eye filler or other augmentation, a minimal brow lift, cheek augmentation, buccal fat removal, which is when they take it from the cheeks.
Buccal flap removal, isn't it?
Oh, sorry, buccal flap removal. Sorry, guys. Again,
just in case anyone's thinking of any buckles.
Lip filler, nose thinning. Especially,
they're saying that Margot Robbie's had all of this done.
Yes, nose thinning, her tip, and reducing the width of her nostrils.
Oh, surely she can't have had. They're literally saying that every single part of her face has been changed.
Yes,
but they always say that, these plastic surgeons, when they get quoted in magazines. Do you know what I mean?
Because
I'm going to look up right now a picture of Margot Robbie as a teenager.
She does look quite different.
Does she? Okay, because I've never actually seen a picture of her.
But then
famous.
Again, I look so different. Like, see, I don't much weight. No, you do. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Well, you've seen pictures of me as a teenager. Yeah, I feel like I kind of look the same.
You were quite hot as a teenager.
Yeah.
So you've remained your hotness. Whereas I had no definition in my face. So someone might think I've had buccal fat removal when actually I've just lost my puppy fat. But
anyway, this is absolutely no shade. Like, I think she's stunning and amazing. People can get whatever work they like.
Yes, if anything, it's inspirational. No, I'm joking.
There's another one from 2010. Yep, she's had work done.
She has.
That is just a fact.
I found it reassuring, I guess, to know that if that is true or if some of it is true, because I genuinely look at her being like, how are you so perfect?
How are you actually less perfect? You're just one of those freaks of nature.
Yeah, so...
but she's not. She's... flawed, just like the rest of us.
Thing is, though, you can't polish a turd. And if I'd had all that work done, I still wouldn't look like that.
Well, I don't know. You know, Megan Fox, obviously, when you see pictures of her, like sort of pre-work, post-work, she was obviously always a very attractive woman, but she was definitely very like girl next doory and then became like a smoking siren. Like,
also,
I would say
Kylie Jenner generally.
She actually said recently, I saw something earlier, how she wore her hair up for years and years and years because she was so embarrassed about her ears. She didn't wear an updo for 5 years, and then she had Stormy, and Stormy had her ears, and that made her love them. So now she'll expose her sticky out ears.
Oh my God.
But then I did think, well, you are Kylie Jenner and you have had a lot of other work done, so surely you could just get your ears pinned back.
Yeah, she probably just has. Another thing I wanted to know if you knew was, because we're not very on TikTok, she says.
I actually am quite on TikTok these days.
Okay, fine.
It's my new scrolling place because Instagram has just become so unbearable that I like to while away the hours on TikTok when I'm hungover.
See, I'm still a bit stuck on Instagram. Also, I say this whilst holding a piece of paper
piece of paper
with some notes on it. which is that, had you heard the TikTok slang DeLulu?
No.
Because I was reading the Sunday Times Style.
Delusional?
Yes.
I mean, yes, I think, I don't think, you look very shocked by that. I'm like, well, what else is DeLulu going to mean?
But I was reading the Sunday Times' guide to TikTok slang.
And oh, that sounds fun.
Chuggy was on there. And sorry, reason I bring this up is because so many of my friends have never heard of Chuggy. And I've been, even my 25-year-old sister didn't know
Chuggy. Yeah, but again, don't you think though, that's because Chuggy is one of those words that's like jumped, it was used by like a few people on TikTok and then it jumps off TikTok and then it's used constantly in media circles.
Yeah.
So it's one of these other media-y type things that are like, they're all saying millennial women are Chuggy, you know, skinny jeans are Chuggy, liquid eyeliner's Chuggy. And then like you say, you go and ask another millennial woman and they're like, what the fuck is Chuggy?
Yeah, or Gen Z-er.
Yeah, I think I actually asked my little sister.
And that she'd never heard
I think
it.
She did know and laughed.
Maybe my sister's actually a bit chuggy.
Well, she's heading that way at 25.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Sorry, Annabelle, if you're listening.
Sozans. okay, right. I feel like we've got loads of other juicy topics, but we should save them for next week because...
Wait, you didn't tell me more about DeLulu.
Sorry, that's it. Oh. So I just wanted to know if you'd heard it. DeLulu. I don't like it. DeLulu. I think I'd say, oh, she's so...
No, I feel like it sounds deluge. A bit like, yeah, maybe it's just because it's I could have probably said that, like got away with saying that when I was like 20, but I would feel like an absolute loser. I still do really need to change my lexicon though, because I do accidentally like use a lot of kind of teenage slang still. Like I'm not a 32-year-old woman and I just forget. And sometimes I'll be like, oh my God, I really shouldn't say that. It's actually pathetic that I just use the word brav.
My boyfriend actually said to me over the weekend, he was like, it's really funny because when you finish recording with Kathleen, you talk a bit like her for like a few hours after.
Because you just like got used to it.
Because I said the other day, like, Ami instead of amateur, which you always say, and I've never said before. And I was like, oh, yeah, but it was really Ami. And then he was like, you've literally never said that before.
It's so it's funny how that happens. It's always the way.
Also, can I say that another piece of lingo that we must stop doing that is also Annabelle's fault is calling each other pet, which no one else does.
No, you get, I got that from you.
Apart from like 50-year-old women in the North calling like their children pet. Yeah. And like we call each other pet.
I like it though. I think it's cute. And then it's actually been extended to petal.
Petal. Yes, it has.
Which is then like our own unique individual term of endearment.
That came from my friend Alice.
Other friends. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I always thought the petal was just an extension of pet.
No, pet is genuinely...
As in I know that both of them are terms of endearment.
Yes,
different. In our own private
language. In our own little universe of...
My TikTok wormhole that I get down, I look at loads of stuff about Central Cee and Madeline Argy. Like, I just can't help it. And I saw these really funny pictures of them the other day on these jet skis. And it was Central Cee with no hat, which I've never seen before.
He's such a little man.
I can see why he wears a hat, and that's all I'll say.
Do you think he's hot?
I definitely think he's attractive. But again, not to be horrible, evil, awful witch. But do look up the pictures of him on a jet ski.
The pictures I saw of him wearing a suit once in his youth, that, you know, they some people unearthed pictures of him at his school prom.
And oh, I haven't seen those.
He was wearing a suit, and I was like,
with nothing on his head.
Yeah, nothing on his head.
Yeah, so he's definitely making the best of himself.
He was actually really good when I went to see him at Primavera. He's got a really good voice.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's great, and I also feel like he's getting better now that he's like. Constantly collaborating with Dave.
Yeah.
So that little mini EP of those like five tracks that Sprinter's on, I was listening to that recently. I was like, there was absolutely no way that Dave didn't like workshop loads of Central Cee's lyrics because they're just 10 times better than like what his most recent releases like Doja Cat and wherever else. Like,
that's so funny.
Way more complex and like loads more nuance and like double entendre and stuff like that. You're like, Dave's been getting into those. He's been getting his pen out.
Oh my God, how little cute. Workshop between Dave and... Sense.
That
That's
would be
cute.
Really cute, wouldn't it? And I also heard that Tiffany Calver, the Radio 1 DJ, told me that Central Cee is actually, like, you kind of see him as this like, TikTok star that was just an amazing rapper and just became famous overnight. And actually, he's been, like, grinding for, like, 7 years and was trying loads of different types of music before rap. So he used to do, like, auto-tune singing and stuff. Like, he wasn't just... you know, from diapers into rap, like
from diapers to rap.
Weird.
Oh my God, Central Cee in a little diaper.
And also like, why did I even say diaper?
No, nappy, we're British. Oh my God, wait, I feel very confused.
Sorry, I'm getting a bit unhinged.
Do you think
here.
He'd be good on the podcast?
Yes, but I don't think he'd do it, sadly. Because I tried to interview him for GQ and he wouldn't even do that, so.
Also, that I think sometimes rappers can be a bit too cool.
I agree. And actually, honeys, you tell us what you think.
H did well, though, to be fair.
H did very well. That's true. Well, let us know what you think, because we are here as a public service for you lovely ladies and gents, and we will interview people that you're interested in.
Yes, we will.
So recommendations always gratefully received.
I fancied H a bit when we interviewed him, but then I got the ick when I watched him play at Glastonbury.
Oh, really?
There's something about seeing
him further away like that, or was it?
Total lack of stage presence. Also,
oh, does he have a lack of stage presence, poor pet?
He was also wearing shorts.
Well, it was quite hot that weekend.
Yeah, but I don't like men in shorts, especially the kind of long board shorts.
Oh, that like really long below the knee, like the kind of, yeah.
And also like, he had a hype man that was like more active than he was. And then like his his like biggest crowd interaction was when he did a cover of Oasis. And I was like, this isn't a flex.
Oh.
To continue our doll theme, I think a good thing to end on, Kathers, is I would love to know your thoughts on, in fact, where social media stars essentially cosplay as non-playable characters, which is a kind of character when in gaming that doesn't really have their own personality. They just react to things. So they have their set mannerisms.
Yeah.
And like, depending on what environment they're in, they'll just like trot them out.
They're like a prop character.
Exactly. So there's this woman who online refers to herself as Pinky Doll, and she has gone viral because she has revealed that she earns $7,000 a day from getting paid to just like react as an NPC. So like her like catchphrase is, I'm going to imitate her, but like someone will throw her like a digital ice cream and she'll go, ice cream's so good. And like, she'll just do that over and over again in a way.
Why do people pay for this? So I have heard about this because I heard about the whole ice cream so good thing, and everyone's like, why is this inescapable ditty just like in everyone's head and taking over the kind of zeitgeist? But I don't understand why anyone would pay for that. Like, I get why someone might make those TikToks, because obviously, like we say, people make weird content out there. Yeah. But why on earth would someone pay to hear her say ice cream so good?
Apparently Timbaland, the rapper, is her most generous contributor.
Ooh.
So okay, these are my thoughts. Is having watched a bit of it, actually, I would say that it appeals to people who are into ASMR, because her voice is really soothing and hypnotizing. And to hear these constant quick catchphrases being repeated, and knowing that if you throw a certain gift at her, she's going to say exactly what you think she's going to say.
God, do you think we should get on the act?
Oh my God, especially because you've got a sexy money on the voice. Side.
Be quite easy, surely.
I don't know.
Guys, would you pay us to say ice cream so good?
Say it.
Ice cream so good.
No, but you have to say it in an NPC voice. She goes, ooh, ice cream so good.
Ooh, ice cream so good.
So it's called a sexy baby voice. And basically it's like hi and kind of like, ooh, I don't have any thoughts, you know. And she also has like, she's like filtered the shit out of her face. So she looks a bit like an
sexy
avatar.
Game
yeah.
Character.
So, and she moves her head in a really jilted, slow way. Like she really is acting like gaming avatar.
It's quite interesting, I think, how this like gaming lexicon has, I keep using the word lexicon today. I don't know why the hell I'm doing that. Yeah. The gaming language is definitely becoming more popular.
So
like
true.
I had to get Marlon to explain to me recently what a side quest was, because I just kept seeing that word everywhere, and I was like, why do people keep using the word side quest? And he was like,
I've literally never heard of that.
So a side quest is not the main mission of a game, but like a side mission, basically. So it's like not your main thing. So people use it, I guess, in reference to like stuff they're doing on the side. AJ Tracy had posted it when he'd gone to Harry Potter World.
Love that.
And
AJ
I was
Tracy
like,
went to Harry Potter World.
I literally, he posed, he really went ham and did like a really good pose with a wand and a cape and everything.
Oh my God.
So he's definitely a big Harry Potter.
Kathers and I once went to the Harry Potter studios and I stole a chocolate frog.
You did? Although everything was free that day.
Oh,
so it was confusing.
It was?
Well, as in, yes, because remember we had Butterbeers and stuff. It was like a press day.
Yes.
They were launching Gringotts.
But I don't think the shop was free.
No, I think the shop was just meant to actually be closed.
Yeah.
And we did it all. We went to Privet Drive. We went on
the train.
We did that. Oh, yeah, when you do the photo.
Yeah.
There's like a Dementor outside.
Yeah, and I've got it printed.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I need to see that.
I gave you one.
Oh,
I think we each have a printed
is.
Version.
I don't know
here.
Where that. Oh, I need to find that. That was a great day.
It was such a great day. But yes, I want you to hear it here first. I am certain that rappers, and I think Drake, is going to start sampling Pinky Doll. I think that's where we're going to hear it next.
You've had it here first, honeys. Yes.
Rappers going to sample it. Because I think that rappers love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Also, I do think that men love like robotic women because they can control them. Like it's a fetish, isn't it? Like with...
Oh my God, it's a bit Stepford Wives.
Or like the Scarlett Johansson film, Her.
Oh, I love that film.
Yeah.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
That's that similar thing of like that soothing robotic female voice that will do whatever you want and will always be there for you.
And the other one, what's it called? Ex Machina.
Yes,
with Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
Oh my God, very, very quickly to finish on the topic of crazy robot films.
What?
I watched the Jack Whitehall film Robots yesterday. It is shockingly bad, I have to say. It did have terrible reviews, but Marlon and I were like, you know what? Yes, it might have 5.7, but we do like a fun, trashy movie sometimes on a Sunday, you know, easy watching while you're doing other stuff. It's Jack Whitehall and Shailene, or maybe Shailene, I never know how you pronounce that, Shailene Woodley.
Oh yeah.
And it's a great plot, like in principle. So it's about people, so Jack Whitehall and Shailene Woodley have both had exact replica robots of themselves created illegally to use for dating. So Jack Whitehall uses his to date the women and then he just goes and has sex with them. And Shailene uses hers to have sex and like be nice to the men and get them to like buy her loads of stuff and fund her life basically. And then it's like what happens when the robots get together and fall in love. And basically, you know what I mean? It's one of those films that could like quite dystopian. That storyline could have been really fun and done really well. And
but Jack Whitehall ruined it.
He's just not a good actor. And I feel like a hater even saying this, but I like his comedy. It's fine. Like I just, he's actually, he can't act. He only plays himself. I think he should go back to the day job of being a comic.
Yes. Also, I went to see his comedy show at the O2 once.
And was it terrible? I mean, I've never seen him. I don't even like stand-up, so.
It was terrible.
Right.
It was
so he's just not that funny,
terrible.
Sadly, for him.
And I do think he ruins the Brits when he does the Brits.
Actually, we have said that in the past. I definitely prefer Mo Gilligan, that's for sure.
Yeah, but he's not funny at the Brits. And I love Mo Gilligan, but again, he's not funny at the Brits.
But there's something about the Brits that seems to make people deeply unfunny, doesn't it? Maybe it's the live setting.
I don't think they should have a host.
The hosts are always terrible.
Them.
But yeah. It might be, to be fair, that the hosting works better on TV. So when you're viewing it as like from home,
yes.
Whereas when you're there in person, it just feels a bit flat and weird.
Yes, although I also remember reading a very dismal review of Mo Gilligan's last Brits hosting job, which was from the TV. Yeah, and I love Mo Gilligan, so it's the Brits' fault for being so boring.
Yes.
Let's not end on a negative note about poor Mo Gilligan.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Mo. Oh, okay, I've got another PSA for all the gals listening.
Or guys.
No, because it's about women's clothing. So unless you are in the market for a bra top as a chap.
Okay.
And this is more.
Well, they might be.
It's literally, so Uniqlo's bra tops, you're like this. For women of all bust sizes, I have discovered the most amazing top. And I then have since realized that it's not just me that discovered them. They are quite popular.
Is it a maternity bra?
My friend Rachel was literally wearing one on Saturday when I saw her. No, it's literally called Uniqlo's bra top. They're 20 quid. It's like £19.90. And it's just a tank top with a built-in bra. And you can get them in all different colors. I got one in cream. My friend was wearing one in black the other day, but you can get it in like blue. And it's just like the easiest, most amazing top because, you know, those like thin fabric tank tops, like they're just not that practical to wear without a bra because you can always just see so much through them. Not anymore.
Gathers, this is literally the best news
like,
ever.
Like literally, like you're going to love them.
Because
it's going to look great on you because it, like, it's really nice and slimming around like the tum. Oh, obviously, you're very slim. I don't mean in that way, but I know you like I know you like a crop top. So it's like a nice crop top that like looks flimsy, but is in fact providing plenty of support and nip coverage and all the rest of it.
Because funny you should say this, I have been spending a lot of time trying to find a racer back bra that I can wear with a tank top that doesn't show the, so that it like crosses your back.
Right.
But with my size boobs, it's just that they're hitched too much when there's a racer back.
So you need one of these.
I need one of these.
Because you could wear it without a bra, definitely. Like it's got the lift and the padding. It's great.
Oh, I love that. That is one of my biggest gripe with Skims is that they don't do like inner bras.
I must say I'm a little bit disappointed with Skims. Having heard so much hype about it, so many great reviews, so many people saying how amazing they are. Didn't love the pair that I got. I got like the holdy inny, I suppose, like compression shorts. So they're to make you look like nice and slim, like under things and all smooth. I just didn't think they were that great for 50 quid.
Oh, I haven't tried. I've just tried the dresses.
Yeah, so this was particularly shapewear.
Mm. Well, so next week, I don't know if we'll have a guest. We might not.
Yeah, we're waiting for them to confirm.
Everyone's
on
holiday.
Getting aired by the PR, so we'll keep you posted, guys. And if not, we'll be back again with another cultural debrief.
Yeah, we want to talk about Zayn Malik.
We really do.
So quite exciting.
And Maya Jama's Vogue cover.
Oh, yes.
We didn't get to that.
Oh, we didn't get that. That's very good. She looks amazing. Anyway, do rate, review, and subscribe. Let us know what you think of Barbie. Let us know what you thought of our Caroline Calloway interview.
Yes, let us know. We actually love, love, love hearing from you. So if you can't give us a review, at least do give us a little bit of feedback.
Yes.
It really helps and helps us to plan our episodes better in the future around exactly what you honeys want to hear from us.
Exactly. Also, Caroline still hasn't sent us our snake oil. But
she hasn't. She's also been ignoring our texts.
She has been ignoring our texts. So goodbye.